Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode 317 for September 13th, 2017. Full Wave Bridge.
Good evening, everybody. From the Ozarks, where we don't have any storms, we're very blessed. This is K90ID, Bob Heil, and you're watching Ham Nation. We have just an incredible amount of information tonight. Very important information, as Ham Radio has been to the front of so much this week. So let's see who all's with us, and then we're going to ship it off to some of the great participants. George, how are you doing down in Mississippi? You didn't have any weather events, did you?
No, we didn't have much of anything here, Bob. When the hurricane finally got here, it turned cool. It was down in the 60s, which was very unusual for us this time of year. But I don't think Don had any down south there either.
Yeah, Don is not going to be with us tonight. He had a lot of things going on, so he won't be here. But Valerie is here, and she has a guest. Valerie, how are you? It's nice to see you and your guest.
I'm doing well. We're actually getting some of the outer bands, I think, from Hurricane Irma. It just started raining today, and I was looking at it, and it looked like the outer bands from Irma. But I've had a busy 2 weeks, and so has Andy Anderson, K-E-0-A-Y-J. We've been very busy with animal rescue and getting involved with people rescue and people information as far as Hurricane Irma. So we're going to be talking about that. Got some great photos and video and stuff of our adventures. So I can't wait to show that to you guys at the top on our segment.
Okay. Nice shirt, Andy. Very nice shirt.
Hey, you like that, Bob? you got one like it? Mine's sort of colorful. I went light color tonight to offset the tan I got while I was down south.
Glad to be that you're here with us. Glad to have you with us. And then, Gordo, how you doing out in Costa Mesa, Gordo? You okay? Weather all right?
Oh, yeah. Weather's fine. And we had a lot of Route 66 special event stations coming in this past week and weekend. And there's still another 5 or so days to work them. So we hope all of you will work Route 66, W6A through W6U, and a few others. That's right. This weekend, Bob, W9DXCC in Schaumburg, Illinois. Friday and Saturday, the big convention. Val will have more information about that. Also, Saturday and Sunday, this weekend, Peoria Ham Fest. Also this weekend, Tapper, your neck of the woods, St. Louis, 15th through the 17th for data. And the 10 gigahertz all this weekend, and albeit HamCon this weekend, the American Radio Relay League's ARRL Southwestern Division Convention. So a big weekend coming up, Bob. Back to you.
Lots going on, and I'm really sorry that I am missing because of this little guy right here. I'm doing a concert in Tulsa, playing their great Robert Morton. They have a wonderful Robert Morton in Tulsa. And I've played there before, and it's a wonderful venue, and it's in the technical center, and we're playing there Friday night. There's going to be a lot of hams there, too, I understand, but this is why I can't be with all of you guys. I'd love to be at DXCC. I'd love to be out with you, Gordo. I need to be one or two, three more people. That's the way it goes, you know. Sometimes you just can't win. Well, we'll get back into some of this. We got a really interesting pine board tonight. We're going to for all of you that have it working, why, we're going to take your 1 watt to 5 watts tonight. I'm going to show you how to do that. George is going to help me. But in the meantime, we've got some very important things to talk about with Gordon. So, Gordon, it's all yours, and let's hear some of the wonderful stories you have about amateur radio and all the disasters.
You bet. Ham radio was really active during Irma. And Victor, if you want to go ahead and lead off with that first shot. And at the Orlando Hamcation, every year we see the emergency units on display. Believe me, they got a real workout. And these emergency units that they have, these were quite some units. Disneyland Emergency Amateur Radio Service. Individual hams had their own vehicles all outfitted, and many of them responded as part of Aries and Races and part of their local team. And many were on digital. So it really points out that digital comms play an important part, especially during Irma. United States Coast Guard Auxiliary, I'm a member, as well as with the American Legion. And Coast Guard was quite active. And the auxiliarists down on the deck were handling traffic up to sometimes helicopters and sometimes to the central units. But packages like this kept those Coast Guard auxiliary units on the air. MT-63, 1KL, 3KL, 2KL, all the speeds were in use by the Coast Guard auxiliary units. And you know, on high frequency, we were scanning all of the different bands. And we were looking at 20 meters on the waterfall, and guess who we heard passing traffic? No other than Val.
He is currently running on DC power right now. The grid is down. It is currently 77 degrees, 86%. I don't know what that is. Okay. Wind 21 miles per hour.
And we have a little bit more of Val, but she was handling traffic like you would not believe. And I would have missed it had I not looked at the pan display and saw on the waterfall a very strong signal, and that was Val. So for those of you that are digital, believe me, Irma really had a lot of traffic that you could have passed. Now, hams had their little portable displays. These portable displays are made by various manufacturers, or you can make them up yourself. The portable displays allow you in an emergency like Irma to be able to set up at an EOC and very professionally get on the air. You can gang them together either side by side or vertically, but the little portable displays have enough room on the inside that you can go ahead and take one of those great BioNO batteries, put it in there, and be able to operate for 2 or 3 or 4 days. Just loosen up the screws, take out a few brackets, slide the battery in, and then slide the units back into the display, and you hardly know that you've got 12 to 16 amp hours ready to roll. And at nighttime, they dim all the lights in the shelters, and you notice the little LEDs up there on the top, the little LEDs with a little bit of nail polish, these point straight down. They're available from Roger at Wired Communications, not the nail polish, but you can direct them any way possible. Some of you that went out and set up in the shelters had the drag-along bag. That's what I use for some of the smaller deployments. And nothing more important on your drag-along bay is a good battery system and watch your voltage. So no matter what you're operating, make sure you're looking at voltage. APRS, very important, especially from what we understand down in the Keys. This allows the EOC to see exactly where you are. Headsets, very important on the HF band where you have feedback, but critical that you have a feedback so you can hear your own voice as you're talking on HF. And both HF as well as VHF and UHF were vital. Simple dipole antenna for HF goes up in a second and puts you on the air on 20 or 40 meters, 20 during the day and 40 and 75 at night. Amateur television, that's what we're going to be doing with Gary this weekend at the local convention out here in Southern California. ATV, another way of bringing back to the EOC what's happening in the field. Anderson connectors, another popular way to stay in compliance with others that may want to plug in. Double check that your Andersons are in good shape. Andersons, if they sit for weeks in the sun, sometimes will have broken connections or missing plastic that will prevent a good seal. Or on the Anderson box itself, we've seen this, unfortunately, more than once, where the pins either pull out of the thing or you have only half a connection. So double check for those ARES members that you've got them well either soldered or properly crimped. But Anderson connectors ensure good compatibility between your station and the power source that may be there. And if you're going into a hazardous area, those hams that had the hard hats were the first to get in. Those without the hard hats, they did not get in. So very important. Same thing with your earwear. Make sure that you don't miss a call by having not only your reflective vest, but a good earphone in there. And a reflective vest, critical, especially at night, especially in the fog. Look at that person. He stands out like two antlers, but that's what a reflective vest can do for locating someone in the fog. Speaker mics, of course, very, very good to have in an emergency. Wearing a handheld on your belt is not going to cut it to be able to hear it with all the noise in the background. And all hams should have the AA packs to power whatever handheld radio you have. In that American Red Cross and others at the shelter are bound to have plenty of AA. Solar power, you bet, after the clouds clear, after Irma. And again, there's APRS, so important for tracking the assets and your hams out there. You can see exactly where they are. Finally, we didn't use 10 gigs in this last emergency, but this weekend is the 10 gigahertz San Bernardino Microwave Society. It's all geared up out here in Southern California. We go to mountaintops to squeak out a signal. We'll get out a lot further on the mountaintop than down on the boat, down on the deck. But nonetheless, 10 gigs is a popular sport this weekend because 10 gigs will help you hone your skills for the mesh network at 2.4. Now, to get on 10, you need a VHF, UHF radio, or even a 10-meter radio. And you need that device that's leaning up against the dish, and that's called the transverter. It takes your 2-meter or your 10-meter signal and takes it all the way up to 10 gigahertz, and that transverter does the same thing. A lot of folks that make transverters, so just Google transverter, and you'll see the different manufacturers. Some come from overseas, and they all do a great job. And this weekend, if you get a chance, check out all those that are on the air. Hang on, here's more from Valerie.
In the rain gauge report, and the wind, I'm sorry, wind 21 miles per hour, east-south.
And she then relayed the report that one of the rivers was overflowing. So that was one of the first. So Val, great job. Not on microwave, but on high frequency, the 20-meter band. So this weekend, all of you hams, if you see dish antennas that look like this, chances are they're taking part in the 10 gigahertz contest, 10 gigs and higher, all this weekend. And we'll be on 10 as well. So, Bob, that's my story, and we salute all of those hams that went out of their way to help out either at home or with other groups with the Hurricane Irma that was all over the southern USA. Bob, back to you.
Nice job, Gordo, and a great report. And hams do it. We don't hear a lot about it in the media, but man, they're out there, let me tell you. And my sister is in Tampa. She's right on the water in Tampa. We figured that it'd be deserted and disastrous and all things like that. And not at all. They really dodged a bullet because they're about 20 feet from the water in Tampa.
Oh, wow.
So they lucked out. And so there again, hams are there to help them. And now they really need them because there's no power and all of that. Well, we continue here working with the pine board thing. It's just been so much fun. Every morning we get on with the bunch that I'm here on 3885. On Mondays at 8:30 Central, we have the peanut whistle net. That's the thing that started it all. Well, you all know what happened when we build this thing. We started out at 1 watt. And I did that for a number of reasons. I wanted you to get kind of a feeling of what's going on. And the heart of what goes on there is the power supply. George is going to come in a while, and he's going to explain again some more about the particular half wave. And tonight we're going to change it to a full wave. But when we get things all fired up and get it going, why, this is what we end up with is about 1 watt of power. And let's see, I think maybe, I think you might be able to see the watt meter up there in the corner. Ooh, passed it up. There's the watt meter, and it's sitting at 1 watt. And boy, what a wonderful piece this MFJ QRP watt meter's been in this project. Because a regular 100 watt, they ain't going to make it. Not going to make it. And there's the supply using the tube. Now, what we're doing there is we're getting about around 150 volts of B plus out. Well, you know how much I talk about high voltage, and you really want to be careful to respect the high voltage. First of all, I'm turning this off and I'm unplugging it. Okay. Now, what we're going to do, because we're going to deal with a little bit of stuff here, of course, it's turned off. But just to make sure, I'm going to take this and I'm going to short out the B plus. Let me get over here. Okay. And anytime you're doing that, anytime you're working on it, you know about the chipstick, but that's just temporary. You want to actually short those two terminals. Of course, you're not, I have this turned on. I unplugged it from the wall. Plus, I turned the switch off. So I have two things protecting me there. But I also have shorted that out because here's what's going to happen. We're going to change that particular half wave, giving us 150 volts, by making a couple of very simple changes, we can get about 340, 50, 60 volts, depends on your transformer. And that's going to bring us up to 5 watts out. Here's all you have to do that. First of all, we're going to remove the tube. Now, the pinouts on that tube, as we know from the drawing, and of course, the tube socket itself, pin 6 is open. It's not used. The first thing we're going to do is ground pin 6. Just ground it. Okay? That's what you have to do. And once we do that, here is the heart of the whole thing. This is it's available at all of the places. Any kind of little electronic parts store is going to have a bridge rectifier. Now, here we go. Now, what we did, let me get this all right here for you. Okay. Pin 6 is not ground, is not used in the tube circuit. So we have to run a ground wire on pin 6 to ground. And should have done that in the beginning, but that's okay because we weren't using it. Now, we're going to unplug the tube. Be careful, as I said, that you've got this thing all shorted out so we know what's going on there. And the rectifier is very simple. I built it into a socket, and that socket is going to fit right in where the tube went. It's very simple to do. You have 4 leads, and those leads are here on this little drawing. We have the AC is going to 3 and 5. The plus DC out is going to pin 8. And then this is going to go to pin 6, which we had to ground. That does not affect it if you use the tube because it's not used. Now, when we do that, and we're going to end up with a regular full bridge rectifier, all we have to do, we've unplugged the tube, so we'll put our half wave over here, and we're going to take this little guy, and again, I made this with one of the sockets from an 8-pin tube, and you'll plug it into the socket just the same as you did the tube. Make sure you got her plugged in good. Now, remember, I got this baby unplugged. I got this baby shorted, and I got the switch. So let me plug it. Okay. Now, we're going to remove that. Here's the most important thing. You have to disconnect the center tap. If you don't, you're going to blow your power supply to smithereens. Can't do that. And what I did here a long time ago when I was building it, the center tap sits right here. Coming out of this transformer, the orange and red wire going to that terminal, and I'm going to cut it. It's on a terminal. And that was running over to ground. So we're just going to take that little guy and cut it. We have disconnected the center tap. There is no center tap. It's floating. With the tube, we needed that. But with the new bridge rectifier, we don't want it. So now, when we turn all this on, get it all tuned up here, we're going to end up with about 5 watts. And it really, really makes a big difference, believe me. And I'm really happy about that. Let me get the thing all set up here. There we go. And what you want to do is set the scale. There we go. All right. And let's see if you can see the meter now. Here's the meter, and I've got it all set up. And the meter's over here on the peg. I'll have to recalibrate it. But anyway, what's happening is we now have about 300, and as I said, 50 volts plus or minus 10 or 20, depending on your transformer. But now we're dealing with 5 watts. And you can do a lot with 5 watts. Of course, we do things with 1 watt, but 5 is really good. And it helps a great deal when we're doing that. So I just wanted to tell everyone, let them know what's going on with making your little pine board a little bit more powerful. And that's it's really simple to do. And there it is. Bridge rectifier, antique electronic supply, all of these online, Mauser, they all have them. So that's the story on that. I am so proud of all of you that are sending me pictures. Check this out. This is from Virginia. Virginia's in Texas. Look what she is doing. I just am so happy with some of the things that she's done. She's really doing it well. That's her beginning of her preamp. She already built the power supply. And here she started off just as we did, putting all of the terminal strips right. Everything's laid out properly. That's how you do it. And she's well on her way. And I appreciate that. That's what she inscribed at the bottom of it. So that was really cool. I appreciated that from her. And she's a real avid builder now, Virginia. And back to some serious stuff I should have shown these in the beginning. This is coming from Eric. Eric is W4EJO. And he tells us a few years ago, he became a Ham Nation viewer. And because of Ham Nation, he got his ticket. He's got his ticket. And now he's all out there helping people in the shelters and passing all kinds of information as hams do. And so there again, Ham Nation has really put some worthwhile needs into people that have made ham radio play for them. There's a picture of Eric. Eric, thank you very much. And we appreciate all of the letters that we get from you guys and gals. I get so many, and I appreciate them. But I thought that was pretty apropos. He's in Florida and working with all of the shelters and things that he does, and all because of Ham Nation did he get his ticket. So I guess that's one of the things that we do here, other than do crazy things of helping people how to build. But I'm really excited about all of the things happening. And remember that all of these videos of each week and the parts list, those wonderful diagrams from Gene, and a lot of comments and stuff back and forth is on our website. I didn't know where else to put it, so we put it at the bottom of Heil Sound. Just go to Heil Sound, H-E-I-L-S-O-U-N-D, heilsound.com, and down at the bottom, all of this stuff. And Victor's been so kind in punching out all of these, just the videos, so you don't have to go through the whole show. And then you have those wonderful things that George does, and he's going to do another one here in just a minute. There it is there. That's the website as you see it, and it goes on down, and away you go. We're so happy to have all of this happening, and I want you to go check it out, and I know that it will help you for sure. But talking about help, it can't get any better than George Thomas. And George, thanks for helping us tonight. But you got some news about a lot of other things tonight, too. And let's get on with that. I think we have ICOM with you and so on. But before we get to him, Don has taken a vacation. No, Don was really working hard last night. He and Martin Jew and Ted Randall, they were 3 hours plus on WTWW. And if you haven't listened to WTWW, you really need to do that. It's an incredible station. It's a shortwave station, 5.085 kilohertz. That's a wonderful, wonderful place to make it happen. Just go to 5 megs plus 085 kilohertz and are you there. They have 100 kilowatt there. And also, he's up on 12.195, I think, megs. Check it out, because they've got some great programming. And this is playing there right now to people around the globe. It's amazing what happens. So check that out. But that's where Don was last night. So he put it all out in the can. So here we go with Newsline. I think Dr. T's with him. And then we're going to hear from George tonight. So, Don, take it away.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2080, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, September 13th, 2017. This has been a season of challenging weather worldwide. Our top story this week is Hurricane Irma, which at the time Newsline went to production, was sweeping through the Caribbean and taking aim squarely at Florida in the United States.
Hurricane Irma is the second strongest hurricane ever in the Atlantic Basin, second only by Hurricane Allen in 1980.
Newsline reporter Bobby Best, WX4 ALA, is also a broadcast meteorologist who says there are some similarities in this hurricane season to ones from the past.
It's mindful of 2005, but when you start looking at Jose, that's right behind Irma, it makes you wonder, that's for sure.
Best says a lot was learned from all the storms of 2005.
We learned a tremendous amount, not only from Katrina, but from that entire year, 2005. I mean, they ran out of names. We had to go into Alpha, Beta, Charlie, naming hurricanes. We had so many, and we did learn a tremendous amount. And also, I want to give credit to April 27th of 2011, the largest super outbreak of tornadoes. We also learned an awful lot about amateur radio operators coming in and providing emergency communications assistance to law enforcement, rescue personnel, etc.
Best thinks Ham's in the surrounding area will be in a good position to help.
Hams in the panhandle are not likely to be affected by Hurricane Irma. Additionally, living in Alabama myself, I know that Alabama hams have already been placed on standby to assist Florida if necessary.
When this report was being prepared Wednesday afternoon, Best says the National Hurricane HF Network is up and running.
As Irma slowly moves to the west, the HF Network down at the National Hurricane Center should begin to start getting a lot of good info in and able to send a lot of info out that hopefully will save some lives. By Friday, the latest models I looked at this morning, and they are predicting a right-hand turn for Irma sometime between Friday night and Saturday morning. Just how far of a right-hand or a northward turn Irma will make could make all the difference in the world for people in Florida. If it makes enough of a right-hand turn, it will put the east coast of Florida on the east side of Irma, which is the less powerful side. If it doesn't take as right of a turn, it will place portions of the Gulf Coast of Florida on the right-hand side, again, which is the bad side. At that time, we would be relying a whole lot on local VHF and UHF nets connecting in also on 75 meters with the Florida state net.
With thanks to Newsline's Bobby Best at WX4 ALA, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, reporting for Amateur Radio Newsline.
As this Ham Nation headline report was being produced on Sunday morning, Irma had made that right-hand northerly turn and was raking the west coast of the Florida Peninsula. Obviously, Newsline will continue to stay on top of this developing story. And for the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, and there is a lot, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Bobby Best, WX4ALA, Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, 738. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
We breathe a sigh of relief as Region 2673 fires a massive X-class flare and launches a solar storm that barely clips Earth. And then all the space weather goes quiet. Those stories and more in the news this week. Solar activity comes to a screeching halt this week as Region 2673 finally rotates out of Earth view and onto the sun's backside. During its two-week transit in Earth view, this region fired no less than 20 M-class flares and 4 X-class flares. It launched proton radiation storms and 2 huge geomagnetic storms that hit Earth and a third one that clipped us. Boy, it's time for a rest, don't you think? And for you emergency responders who've been dealing with Hurricane Irma and the aftermath of Harvey, you guys can finally breathe a sigh of relief. The amateur radio bands are opening back up. GPS is getting better again. All the satellite services are recovering. And it looks like things are going to be pretty smooth sailing for the next couple weeks. Switching to our M-flare threat meter, you can see back on the 3rd is when we started seeing that X-ray flux rise because of Region 2673 forming very unstable conditions. We started popping M-class flares shortly thereafter. By the 6th and the 7th, we were popping X-class flares. We popped so many M-class flares over that course of that week from about the 3rd to the 10th that I lost count, but there are over 20 of them. Even the noise floor for the X-ray flux stayed above the seafloor levels, so the ham bands were incredibly noisy. There were more radio blackouts than you guys could probably handle, and you were just wringing your hands when it came to trying to do emergency relief efforts for these hurricanes. Luckily, after the 10th, you can see the solar flux, after that X-class flare, the solar flux dives, and it just continues to drop and drop and drop. That's because Region 2673 is now out of view. It's wreaking havoc on the backside now, and we can breathe a sigh of relief as everything goes shh. Switching to our solar radiation monitor, you can see we've actually had two radiation storms in the last week. The first one hit late on the 4th into the 5th, and that rose things to levels to almost an S3 level. It took a little while for that to die down, and as soon as that died down, then we got hit, bam, with the second one on the 10th. That was associated with that second really big X-class flare, and then that we're still dealing with that one. This particular radiation storm is a bit more energetic than the first one, and the levels are still beginning to die off. We still are at an S2 level, coming down to an S1 level storm, and this does cause problems for you amateur radio operators and GPS operators, especially at high latitudes, but things should be getting better and better over the next few days, and we will come down to normal levels probably by the end of the week. Switching to our solar storm conditions, you can see before Region 2673 became a real player, we had mild activity, mainly from some fast wind, but nothing that lasted all that long. As soon as Region 2673 fired off a couple of those big storms at us, by the 7th, we were starting to see the effects of those storms, and by the 8th, bam, we got hit by a G4 level storm. There were actually two of them, and the conditions ended up jumping up higher than predicted, but luckily they didn't last as long as predicted. So we came down after about the 9th. We started coming back down into unsettled conditions reasonably quickly, which I'm sure helped when it came to the emergency response for Irma and for Harvey. Since then, things have been reasonably unsettled, but then 2673 fired off that another X-class flare with a huge solar storm, which we've been clipped by the shockwave of. And so on the 13th, we got hit yet again. Luckily, it was only mild storm conditions for a short while, and I think the worst is over. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are coming down from being hit by the shockwave of that massive solar storm that's gone west of us. Luckily, we're not being hit by the brunt of that storm. NOAA had forecasted major storm conditions at high latitudes, which are downgrading now to minor storm conditions, with probably moving into active conditions in through the weekend. At mid-latitudes, we're looking at probably active conditions, once again downgraded from the minor storm conditions, which will probably go to unsettled conditions in through the weekend. This storm is not nearly as dramatic as the G4 level storm that brought Aurora clear down to Arkansas and Kentucky. This one has been seen in Germany, but not quite so intensely. So expect things to be calming down, and we should be seeing green through the rest of the week. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, what a difference a day makes. Last week we were looking at solar flare risk all in the yellow, and now it's fallen off the map and everything is in the green. And now solar flux is more along the lines we expect for solar minimum. So they're kind of in the yellow now. We're kind of dealing with a little bit of radio propagation issues just because the solar fluxes are dropping. Now, as far as radiation storm outlook is concerned, we are sitting around an S2 level right now. It'll probably drop to an S1 level tomorrow, and particle flux will continue to drop. We should be getting back to normal conditions by the end of the weekend. So you amateur radio operators and you GPS operators, especially at high latitudes, you're going to get a respite from the interference from this radiation storm here pretty soon. So the space weather this week is finally calming down. Such a huge difference from last week. So you emergency responders for the hurricanes, you no longer have to deal with the big flares and the radio blackouts on the day side. Those effects are going away. On the night side, you no longer have to deal with the effects from the big solar storms. Those are finally going away. And even at the poles, the effects from the radiation storms are finally dying down. So we can just basically finally breathe a big sigh of relief. On top of that, we've had gorgeous aurora all the way down to places like Arkansas and Kentucky and even Germany. And so you aurora photographers who have gotten some unbelievably beautiful shots over the last week or so, you can finally take a break and recharge your batteries, because we all need it. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
And Dr. Tamitha, see you all. And all will see you this Saturday night at the ARRL Southwestern Division Convention Banquet. See you there, Dr. T. George, back to you.
Okay, Gordo. Boy, there has been a lot happening storm-wise, not only here on Earth, but apparently on the sun, too. So thanks, Dr. T, for bringing us that update. We'll be back in just a moment, because I'm going to talk a little more about diodes and rectifiers. But first, a message from ICOM.
It's September. Time to plan ahead. What is your emergency plan? September is Emergency Preparedness Month. Now is the time to review your communications plan and make sure your ICOM equipment is ready to go for any air, land, and sea situation. Communicate with the touch of your fingertips. Perfect for small spaces, the IC7100 all-mode transceiver is the ideal D-Star option to add to your communications plan. Angled control head and touchscreen for quick intuitive operation, large internal speaker for clear digital audio, and it's perfect for multi-band and all-mode communications. A compact and smart design, the ID4100A is a D-Star mobile with big rig features. Its intuitive interface, variety of operating modes, and Bluetooth capability make this the preferred D-Star option during an emergency. Integrated GPS receiver, new dot matrix display for enhanced DR mode and GPS information, terminal mode and access point mode, applications for iOS and Android devices, and a micro SD card slot for voice and data storage. Take the rugged IC2730A dual-band transceiver wherever you may be. Its large LCD screen, easy-controlled mounting, and Bluetooth capability make it ideal for the ham on the go. VHF-VHF or UHF-UHF simultaneous receive. 50 watts of output on both VHF and UHF, and optional VS3 Bluetooth headset. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. Register to win for some great prizes like T-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you can win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for this month, that new radio is going to be the ICOM ID4100A dual band transceiver. It's an entry-level D-Star mobile with big rig features, built-in GPS, full dot matrix display, micro SD card slot for voice and data storage, and there's available Android and iOS applications. It does both analog and D-Star, of course. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And there's another chance that you could win a radio. We're celebrating our 12th anniversary at Amateur Logic coming up in October, and we're going to be giving away a nice radio package here, thanks to ICOM. We've got the IC7300 HF transceiver. It's a software-defined radio, probably the hottest radio going right now. We're going to give that away along with MFJ power supply, compact switching supply here, a Howell ProSet IC as well. And those are custom designed to work with ICOM radios. Of course, you're going to need antenna and coax, so we're going to include 100 feet of RG8X from MFJ and the MFJ cobweb antenna. That new popular compact antenna looks kind of like, a rectangle clothesline. Yeah, right up there in the top. We used one of those at Field Day this year, and it worked really well. So we're going to sweeten the pot a little bit, too. Tommy and I are going to throw in one more prize here, and that's going to be a pair of our custom gold-plated PL259 connectors. Now, it's not real gold, it's faux gold. And we don't recommend you put these on your coax, but we're going to give away a pair. You know, these are the same ones I was giving folks at Hamvention this year. So if you'd like to win all of that, well, all you need to do is go to amateurlogic.tv/contest. You'll get all the details there on how to register, the rules, everything you need, how the drawing's going to be handled. So thanks, ICOM, MFJ, and Howell Sound for making that possible. And now back to our Tales of the Rectifiers. Bob showed you a little change tonight that doubled the voltage on the power supply there for the pine board rig. So I thought it'd be a good time just to go over Some various rectifier drawings here, diodes, if you will. The first one here, this is a simple half-wave rectifier. We've got the transformer here. It's got AC voltage going into it. It's got AC coming out on the other side, but at a much higher voltage. You can kind of tell that because we've got more turns on the secondary here than we've got on the primary. Of course, one side of that we're tying to ground. That's going to be also the negative voltage coming out of this. And we've got a diode here. Coming out that diode is going to be our positive half supply. Of course, normally you've got a capacitor in here too to do a little filtering. I just didn't include those here for simplicity's sake. But you think of that diode, you see the direction that the arrow is pointing there. Let's think of our positives going this way through that arrow, the direction that it's pointing. Now, when they came up with the diode signal, they thought that electricity flowed from negative to positive. It wasn't until later that they changed their mind about that. But anyway, when you're looking at a diode, that's how you can think about it. All right, this is a half-wave rectifier. There's only a diode in the top line here off the transformer. So what that means is this 60-cycle waveform we've got going right here, we're only going to get the positive peaks coming off of that. The negative peaks aren't going to be used at all. So we're only getting half of the duty cycle of that AC waveform. So what that means is our voltage is going to be lower than what we were putting in there because we've only got half of the waveform or half of the voltage actually being used. And also, it's going to mean reduced current, too, because we're only using half of what we've got here from our transformer. Okay, you can improve that a little bit. And this is a full-wave rectifier. Now, this is what was originally in the Pine Board. We talked about that previously here on Ham Nation. It was using a tube, but I simplified it down to diodes just to make it easier to explain. Same situation here. We're putting in AC voltage. We've got a higher voltage coming out the other side of this transformer. This line here in the middle represents zero. That's your positive up there, negative down here. Okay, in this configuration, this transformer is center tapped. Right in the center of the secondary winding there, we've got it going to ground. And so what that means is when a signal comes in here, at one point, it's going to swing. The top lead here will be positive in respect to our center tap here, while the other lead will be negative. And it just keeps alternating back and forth at a 60-cycle rate. So what that means is we've got a diode here in either line. Anytime that this end swings positive, that's going to flow through this diode and go out here to the output. Anytime this line on the bottom swings positive, same thing's going to happen. And, of course, our negative will be right here. So what that ends up being is we're getting to use all parts of the wave there, not only the positive half cycles, but the negative half cycles too. So that's going to increase our voltage a little bit. That's also going to increase our current because we're using the full duty cycle of our AC signal. Now, one other thing to mention here, since we are using both halves of it here, our ripple frequency that's coming off of here, of course, this is DC, but there's still going to be some AC leakage. You're going to see a ripple that'll be at 120 hertz, and that's because we've essentially doubled the frequency there because we're using both halves of the waveform. The line across the middle here, that's 0 volts. Okay, what Bob did tonight is he showed us a full wave bridge rectifier, and that's this right here. Now, to make this work, you don't use a center tap on your transformer. You actually take four diodes, put them in this configuration right here, and we can take this junction right here, tie it to ground. The other junction right opposite on the other side, that's going to be our positive right there. Negative will be ground. Now, we could have just drawn, you know, a line from here. That didn't have to be ground connections there, but, you know, that was just easier to draw it. Also, note that there's more than one way to draw a ground symbol. In Bob's diagram, he was doing it like this. That's also ground. So you could see ground coming either way. There's also a ground that looks like that. So more than one way to represent ground. Anyway, forget all of that. Back up here to what we were talking about. Anytime this side here swings positive, that current is going to flow right here out this diode on the top. And we don't have the center tap here, so we've got to use the other side of the transformer. So while this one's positive, this one is going to be negative. Well, we've got conduction because we can go backwards here. Let's look at it like this. So that's how we're completing the circuit, because you've got to use both sides of that transformer. Over here in the other one, we were switching between one side of the transformer and the center tap. We couldn't take advantage of the other side of the winding here because if you stopped and thought about it and tried putting the diodes in there in any different direction, you couldn't make it work. That's the only way you can make it work with just two diodes. But with four, we can do it like this, and we don't use that center tap. Conversely, if this side was swinging negative and this side was swinging positive, well, the flow is going to be right the opposite from what it was. Positive this direction, negative this direction. So by doing this, we're still going to end up with, you know, our 120 hertz here of ripple frequency. But we've done a couple of other things. Namely, the biggest thing we've done is eliminate that center tap on the transformer. By doing that, you know, if you look back at the previous one here, let's say this transformer was, the secondary on it would put out 200 volts. That means one half would be 100 volts. The other half would be another 100 volts because it's center tapped. So you only get half of the voltage off either side there. Well, down here, if this is 200 volts, there is no center tap. So we're putting a full 200 volts across our rectifiers here. So that means we've doubled what we can get out of here just by using two more diodes. That gives us a higher voltage. The current is really not going to be, I wouldn't say, any greater than we had before with the regular full wave here, but the voltage we've doubled, and we're still using the full duty cycle of the wave there. Of course, you're going to put your filtering out here, so you got your capacitors and whatever filtering you do to smooth out that ripple so that you don't really see that 120 hertz there so much. But that's it. You know, that's how a full-wave bridge rectifier works as opposed to just a regular full-wave and a half-wave rectifier. Pretty simple stuff. You know, if you sit down and draw this out, think about it a little bit, you can make sense of how it all works out. So that's my lesson for tonight on rectifiers. And I've got some stuff to give away here. You know, last time I asked a question out of Gordo's General book. This one right here, as a matter of fact, and it's flagged. That means Gordo marked this question especially for me to ask you. And it is, what factor or factors affect the MUF, M-U-F? Is it path and distance, or excuse me, path, distance and location, time of day and season, solar radiation and ionospheric disturbances, or all of these choices are correct? Now, I didn't tell you what MUF or MUF stood for last week because, you know, that's not going to be on the quiz there. They're just asking MUF or MUF. Well, that's maximum usable frequency. So what affects that? Well, I had a winner, and it was David Harden, KJ4CMY. And David said, George, the answer is all of these choices are correct. Now, that's right, David. The path distance and the location are going to be factors affected by the maximum usable frequency, as well as the time of day and season, and solar radiation and ionospheric disturbances. Congratulations, David. DX Engineering will be sending you one of these nice DX Engineering tote bags. This is the one I use right here to carry my coax in to field day and outdoor activities. It's heavy-duty canvas. It's not a lightweight shopping-type bag. It's really great for hauling your ham gear in, and very convenient as well. So thanks for that, DX Engineering. So next week, I've got another question here, and this one is kind of in context with what we were talking about tonight. What is the name of the first semiconductor diode? What's the name of the first semiconductor diode? If you think you know the answer to that, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might win this MFJ-148RC dual 12 and 24-hour radio control clock. This is a great clock here, automatically sets itself from WWV, and it has a built-in ID, 10-minute ID timer in it. So a very nice clock there. You can set one side for your local time. You can set the other side for UTC or wherever you want, and they both stay synchronized with WWV. So hamnationcontest@gmail.com. Tell me the answer to that. What was the name of the first semiconductor diode? And while I'm talking about MFJ, I just want to briefly mention again, you know, they're going to have their 45th anniversary coming up here September 29th and 30th. That's at the end of this month. That's not far away. If you think you want to go to that, you need to go now to mfjenterprises.com and register. They're going to be giving away prizes. They're going to have free factory tours. And we've seen some of those factory tours here before on Ham Nation. It's been a long time now. So I'm going to be going up there and taking some tours, shooting a little video. They're also going to have free lunch and tailgating and free forums, and they'll be giving a license exam. So go to mfjenterprises.com and register there. Let them know that you're coming if you can. If there's any way you can make it, you really ought to go to this. It's as much fun as you would have at any ham fest, guaranteed. You'll be glad you did. Well, that's going to do it for me tonight. And
hey, George.
Yes, Gordo.
Yeah, again, give us the dates of the MFJ get together, and can you maybe highlight some of the activities that Martin and his team have planned? Right now, Victor's getting Valerie back up on the line. So a little bit more about it, and I think it's next weekend. Is that right? Not this coming one, but next weekend.
I think that's right. I don't have a calendar in front of me right now. It's September 29th and 30th. So, yeah, that's about right. You know, right around 2 weeks, they've got major prizes from MFJ, Amatron, Cushcraft, High Gain, Mirage, and Vectronics. They're going to do the drawing on Saturday, September 30th at 2 p.m., and you do have to be there to win on that. Free factory tours, interesting and educational tours for the whole family from the MFJ factory, Ameritron, Cushcraft, High Game, Mirage Vectronics, and the MFJ Metal Shop. You know, there's more than one location there. They've got several, so there'll be a lot of tours given over the weekend. You can get you can watch those on Friday, September the 29th from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., and also Saturday the 30th from 7 a.m. to 12 noon. And then they're going to have free lunch Saturday from 12 to 2 p.m. You'll need to bring your own lawn chair, though, because it does fill up. And they're going to do tailgating there as well. If you got something you want to sell, bring it, put it on the tailgate of your pickup or whatever you're in, and sell it there in the parking lot. Free forums, I don't know what those are going to be yet, but they are going to have some forums there as well. And they're going to be giving FCC license exams. I do know that Ted Randall is going to be there. I think Tom Medlin will be there. I don't know if Bob or Gordo will be there. I think maybe Don will be there. But
yes, I think, Don maybe had that on his plans, and I wish I could be there, but unfortunately, weekend after next, I'm doing yet another ham radio convention out here on the West Coast. But let me tell you, MFJ is such a strong supporter of ham fests, even regional small ones. They bring that huge truck, and we really appreciate all the hard work that MFJ does. Takes them a full day, George, as you and I have seen down there in Orlando and many of the other ham fests, to set up their mammoth booth. So thanks to MFJ. And Martin, if you're watching, thanks to you. Happy birthday a few weeks ago. And keep up all the great pace setting that MFJ does for our ham radio industry. George?
Okay, fantastic. Gordo, we will miss you. But we're going to have a good time anyway. And we've got free chicken there. So, You can't lose on that deal.
All right. Let's maybe tune in with Amanda. Hi, Amanda. How are you? And thanks for all that you've been doing, your hard work with your ARES group. Amanda?
Okay. Well, I wanted to show you some kind of cool little things. Hopefully we'll get Val back on the line. But I wanted to show you guys this really neat solar panel that we have. So first of all, it's this thin.
Small.
Yes.
Thin. Lightweight.
Yes.
Camo covered.
Yes, and it's camo. Not that that concerns me much. But then it kind of unfolds here. Jeff told me he was going to help me, but he's too busy talking on the radio to give me assistance.
Good job, Jeff. You're doing great.
And your radio's interfering with my microphone.
That's okay.
All right, so...
Wow.
Here we go.
How many amps?
Who makes that?
It's 30 amps. Is that correct? 30 watts. 30 watts. It is 30 watts. And okay. I have the battery here. It's not a biano by any means, but it can source this. It can keep that charge if you have sun. Now, mind you, when you're in a hurricane, you don't always have sun, so that's not always the best bet. You might want to find your bicycle or something to hook up to keep your batteries charged. But it's kind of a cool little gadget that it was given to us. So we're going to try to put it to our full advantage for sure. And we try it for little portable stations, for demonstration purposes, things like that. Now, I can't even tell you how much that thing cost. Like I said, it was given to us, but it was a pretty neat little gift. I just had to say that.
That's pretty great. Nice. All right, 30 watts. So that's 30 watts, 12 volts, probably going to do about 1.5 to 2 amps. And that'll be fine, Amanda, with a lot of receive and a little bit of transmitting on a QRP radio. You'll be fine. And can't wait to hear that little solar system on the air with your rig soon.
Me too. I think if we had a good 718, is that the QRP rig? Yeah.
817.
Oh, an 817. If we had one of those or something and we wanted to do some HF, I think that'd be awesome. It's better than toting around a big one. But there's some other minuscule ones you could probably put out there as well. maybe even your 7100s would run not too badly off of that. But the biggest thing, Gordo always talks about this, is your power poles. Make sure you have your power poles hooked up to you to the back of your radio so that they're very transferable. Right, Gordo?
Absolutely. And make sure you've got your power poles well seated. And that means you've got a little tiny screwdriver. And let me get it out here. And you push up on it until it goes click. Because if you don't, you plug in the power poles, one side is going to come out and nothing's going to happen. So make sure that you push in those power poles until they go click.
Who made that solar panel, Amanda?
Hold on. Jeff, who made that solar panel? Stand by. He's going to go grab it. There was a big, it said power something on
power
it.
Power film?
Power.
I think I saw that at
Power Film, yes.
Oh, yeah. Power film is wonderful. Yeah, they had them at the Dayton Hamvention 2 or 3 years ago. They had a big booth there.
They were at Dayton Hamvention a couple years ago, Jeff. He can't hear anything you guys are saying, so he's relying on me to relay. All right, so did we get Val on here?
Hey, I'm glad we're back. We've had a busy 2 weeks. You know, 2 weeks ago we had Skyped Andy in, and Andy was down in taking care of animal rescues in Texas after Harvey. And after I saw that, I talked my son into coming down here, and we hopped in the truck, and I asked for donations from my local area here. We filled our truck with buckets of apples for the horses and dog foods and kennels and everything. And so we went down there to join Andy. And I have a short video of our experience going to Texas, my son and I, KD9AOG, and I in Texas. This is us driving into Beaumont. It's in a little town just west of Beaumont called Nome. And it was pretty much underwater. There should be volume on this.
One helicopter, another helicopter. We're at the Ford Park here in Beaumont, Texas. The entertainment center where they have concerts and sporting events, it's the arena. That's the people shelter rescue. And they're bringing people in. We're in the pavilion section, which is open air, but it's roof over our head. So the vets are there and they're processing all these 100 or so chihuahuas from a hoarder they found when they were out doing search and rescue. And so we're just taking a break, and later tonight when things calm down, we'll be able to walk the dogs, and I'll be able to show you some of the cutest things you ever saw here at the pavilion. They don't want anyone walking them in the daytime because it's just so darn hot and they're already dehydrated. So I'm on maybe two and a half hours of sleep. How many are you on, Riley?
Like three, maybe, hopefully.
And they really put Riley to work. A young, strong man. He's hauling 50-pound bags of dog food all over the place in kennels. And I was helping the girl with the database for processing and checking in volunteers. And that sort of died down now. So here comes another helicopter taking off. We're packing up and moving out. So we're tearing down crates and everything. Hopefully you guys can hear me. A lot of big ones over here. They're horrible. They moved a hundred or so dogs out last night. Looks like the goats are gone. They were back there. I don't know what we all got, but way back there. There's some goats. A lot of the horses seem to be gone, so they're packing them up and moving to Houston. So we're just helping tear down crates. But at one point, this had probably at least 500-600 dogs. But there's Riley hard at work. And there's the way in the back there. Those are the aggressives. No one allowed back there. And all the dog food that was donated that we kept, the rest we donated away. Lots of leashes and porta potties. And just thought I'd get you inside here.
And it was pretty much an experience. It was in the high 80s, but with the humidity down in Houston, and we obviously had no air conditioning in an open air pavilion, but it was definitely an experience. I got some pictures, and by the time we got down there, noon Saturday. We left and we drove all night long, and there's some of the chihuahuas we will ask you about. When we got down there noon Saturday, Andy had marching orders to go somewhere else, so we were all going to originally be there and hang out in his camper. That's a look at Highway 10, just east of Houston, going into Beaumont. You were in Port Arthur, and this is the area kind of we were at, and that's actually an interstate completely underwater. And if you show the next two slides, that's the Yukon after, and I think I have one of the fender. I mean, I don't know how many bugs we have on that car, but it definitely went through battle going down to down to Texas. But it was definitely well worth it. And these are from Jerry Singer, KZ0CAT. He also joined us down there. And where was Jerry?
Jerry was originally in Harvey, in a Harvey area up north of Dallas. And he came down that way to help out, did some animal rescue with the Cajun Navy. And then after that, he was dispatched by me, as a matter of fact, to come over to Pensacola area and give us a hand over there to see where we could use him over there with another agency that was moving into that area.
Yeah, so he's got a couple more pictures there. He was helping out down, that's when he was down in Texas. But now Jerry is actually still down in Florida. And
He's further south now. I think he's down in the Orlando area, possibly even further down. He's working with another agency that is doing human rescue along with the animals. So he's coordinating, been very busy, and graciously donated his time and his efforts to everything. And he came down with his whole family, everything they own. And they're down there making the best of it and doing what they can to help. And it's much appreciated.
And Andy has a bit of a story, if you want to show that new photo I just gave you called Andy. Yeah. Why don't you tell the story behind this?
Okay.
This is back in Harvey, for Hurricane Harvey. And then we'll talk about Hurricane Irma in a second.
Yeah, when I was in the Vidor in Beaumont area, there was a little church group there that they put together. It was a combination of a bunch of people that had already lost their homes and knew they couldn't do anything else. But they came up and offered us food and shelters, place to eat and everything. And I was introduced to this lady that you just saw the picture of. Her name's Lacey. And she's from down in that area and had moved, I just found out, up to the Indiana area, but she was back down there looking for her parents, who she couldn't find. So the help went out, and I was standing there, and they put me in touch with her, knowing that I was a ham radio operator. And got out the map and looked at the shelters, and I went with my vehicle, and within about an hour I had found them. But it took about 24 hours total effort to get them hooked up together. So I received this on my cell phone, a picture from her, all smiles and everything, and it was a happy moment for everybody down there. And I come back up here, and I got notified by the sheriff's department in the county I live in that she had been looking for me. Come to find out, she lives 48 miles from me here in Indiana, and tomorrow night I get a ribeye dinner.
It feels really good to help. We were able to see a lot of owners reunited with their pets over at the Beaumont, the Ford Park in Beaumont, and it was a lot of physical work. A lot of heavy lifting in really intensive heat. We drank warm bottled water. We did not have ice. And but you didn't really, I mean, it was tough, but you really didn't feel it because it just felt really good.
It did. It felt good. You realize at a point that you're not just helping them, but you're helping yourself. Something comes out in you, and you rescue yourself too at the same time.
And so as soon as I got home, that's when Irma started kicking in, and you got home too. Same thing happened to you too.
Yeah, I was dispatched by FEMA. I am a volunteer tech support for FEMA on the technical side with electronics and satellite navigation stuff and SAT VSAT systems. So I was dispatched to Fort Campbell, Kentucky on the way home, and sent out 147 semis and four airplanes loaded with everything in the world that you can imagine, and sent them down there to the Miami and Fort Lauderdale area to set up FEMA operations.
Before the storm?
That was before the storm was getting. We were staging in that area, and since I've been home, I've been to the Indianapolis airport twice. loading up C5As with VSAT terminals and sending them down.
And I know I couldn't go down to Florida. I just came back from Texas and I had a lot going on. So I did what I could with my ham radio expertise by joining this group. We become involved with this one group. If you want to put that website up, IrmaRescueHelp.com, I believe, is the website. And great crew. I mean, there's some great people in there. They're Swiftwater certified, a lot of IT people, really good project managers. I mean, I'm just so impressed with the crew that's involved in this. If you click on that yellow map area there, I mean, you can go in here, and it's just a great resource for anybody that wants to know. If you click on hospitals, you can find out which hospitals are open, which one are taking medical staff. You could click on the shelters, unclick the hospital and click on the shelters, and it's going to show you which ones are closed, which ones are still open, and they're trying to keep all this stuff up to date. So it's a really good resource. And we wanted to do some volunteer work, but FEMA's sort of taken that over. And so we're becoming more of an information hub right now. And if you go to, for those of you who use Zello, we have a Zello channel. We have a bunch, but the one you want to really use with them is Hurricane Irma Resource Assistance. And if you go on Zello and look for Hurricane Irma Resource Assistance, they're going to be you. They'll try and help you, let you know when power is coming back on or anything else you can, any other questions you may have about that. But as far as coming and rescuing people, that's still through FEMA and call 911 and your local emergency services group. But a really good group, and I was really happy to be involved with that.
Yeah, they were really good. They're very active, very proactive, and can change the scenario in a minute. I mean, it can change from animal rescue to people rescue to the whole mission changes from being there on the spot to helping another rescue group and becoming a resource for them. They've got that capability. They've got the manpower to do it. And where they have it up here is really where it counts. They're right on the ball with it, eager to change, eager to help, and they are there for the people of Florida.
And we're not really an organized group. It's just a bunch of us volunteers getting together and put this all together in 4 days, and we hope to take it to a bigger level eventually to be there. And so that's just, I just kind of want to let you guys know what we've been up to, and it's really kept us busy, but it was a labor of love. And
labor
everybody
of fun, too.
Yeah, it is.
Because we had our little humorous events going on and here and there and stuff just to keep the humor into things that we could. A lot of phone calls, 2-hour nights where you could actually maybe get some sleep. But we worked through it, and it's coming together quite well.
And, you know, with Hurricane Harvey, they never lost the internet. So they relied on those Zello channels, which use internet and data. But with Hurricane Irma, that was not the story. Especially in southern Florida, 80 to 90% of the cell sites were down. And I think we've talked a lot of people into getting their ham ticket in that group. So we're going to be come back real strong for the next disaster that may arise, and we'll be there for everybody. So
yeah, we're going to watch. We're going to keep a close watch on what develops, and no doubt phones are going to be ringing on Val's end and my end, blowing up and whatnot, and ready for the next major step for what we're going to do to help those people. I wanted to take just a chance for all those people that donated when the first call went out for funding. You sent me $2,700. I was totally knocked off the pedestal with that one. I did not know where to go. I spent a little bit of it for personal stuff, for gasoline, yeah, propane, some dog food for myself. Not for me, my dogs, okay? Let's get that straight. Don Wilbakes will take off on that one. But we'll... We went with this search group, a little church combined group, and these people had lost everything like I'd mentioned. And so I took what was left, that was $2,200, and I donated it to them. These people lost everything, and I still had my home and my dogs. So that's where it went.
Thank you, guys. Whoever says hams aren't generous, they're wrong. Thank you guys so much for doing that. And I think that's what we've got all for now, so I'll pass it over to you, Amanda.
All right. Thanks, you guys. And Andy and Val, you guys are such a good team. And I tried to listen whenever possible. But having X flares during a hurricane doesn't really help the situation when you're trying to operate on HF. So anyhow, I did try to listen. And Jeff said that Radio wanted to come in here and say hello and say thank you guys for saving all the other dogs out there. And he's not reading my cue of when I'm saying bring the dog in, but that's okay. I have my dog treats here. Andy, these are not for you, mind you. Okay. He wants to say hello. Hi.
Hi, Radio.
We'll move that out of the way. Get those ears in there. Come on. Good boy. Good boy. Oh, you're such a cutie. He says
look,
thank you guys
10
for...
10 gigahertz ears.
10 gigs at least. I mean, I'm telling you, we pick up reception like none other. So anyhow, I do have a couple of questions. I find it amazing what you could do from such a distance to help during the hurricane. And like you said, Val, you just kind of hooked up with a group. What were they requiring? Did you need to have any training or did they were just looking for able bodies? How did that work out?
Well, if you go to that website, IrmaRescueHelp.com, there is a volunteer application on there. And they do serious vetting. It's not a cowboy brigade. I have had the NIMS training with the ICS training. I do have amateur radio operating experience and things like that. So they gleefully accepted me. Dispatchers, they have serious vetting for all their dispatchers, all their rescuers. They have to have certain certifications, right? Do they
yes,
have to have Swift
do.
Water and things like that? But there's places anybody can help out. They had an IT staff. They have people who are just calling up the shelters and seeing if they're full and what capacity to update that map, you know, stuff like that. I mean, there's all kinds of work you can do from afar. If you don't have the money to contribute and you can't drive all the way down there, you know, this is one of the ways you can help. And
it goes on and on and on. Like I said, the scenario might change, but the mission is always the same. We're there to help. We're a resource. We're sitting on the shelf, a lot of standby and waiting, just biting at the nails. And if the girls down there that are on those channels are listening to me now, I know many of you have broken fingernails. Lisa, I know you've broken fingernails. Rini, I know you've broken fingernails because I heard about it at 2 o'clock in the morning. Okay. You don't need to call me for that anymore. I'm aware of all of it. You know,
well, you know,
I hear
some
your pain.
Some of that stuff happens, which we completely understand. And it's just amazing. I'm going to take Valerie because this is such a transition. I don't even know what to say. I'm shocked. Here she is, Miss DXer, right? She's a contester. She's winning all these plaques, all these awards. And boom, all of a sudden this bug hits her that she says, I can do something. I've got to do it. I find that really amazing that you just got into gear. And I kind of got thrown into Aries the same way, where Jeff was asked to come help during a fire and he said, well, you're coming with me, I'm not going alone. And I had no idea what I was doing. They just put me in front of a radio and some instincts kicked in and the rest you just pick up on the way. So I'm sure you've learned like a ton during this. I'm inspired by what you just picked up over this last 2 weeks of what you're interested in now. I think it's amazing, Val.
I think we're dragging her in.
It's addicting. It's like, you know how when you first get bit by the amateur radio bug and that's addicting? Well, this is kind of addicting too. You do get high on the adrenaline from doing something good. And so I was able to use HF and get on 20 meters and I got an Aries guy from a neighboring county. They were doing an active rescue of 12 to 15 elderly people and their apartment building was flooding. And the Aries guy helped me out and to help get, they were moving these, and there was only one guy there moving these elderly people to higher ground. And so amateur radio did play a role in this a lot more so than Harvey. So, and it once you start doing something like this, be careful, you are going to be addicted.
That's right. And there's only one thing I want to throw out there. And I know that Val and Andy are both going to back me up on this. And Gordo, too, of course, because he's been in so many emergency situations. There's some rules, you guys. Never, ever, ever self-deploy yourself. Always be invited by an agency or asked to assist. Always make sure you have all of your credentials in place. Put them on a flash drive. maybe not even your phone, but of course your phone as well, or have them printed out. Have a folder for those things and know what you're doing and be prepared when you actually go to said emergency if you're actually deploying. Now, Val, the second time didn't, but you want to make sure you have your cooler of your own food. You don't have to rely on other people. Gordo, what say you? You're even an assistant section emergency coordinator or something out there in California, aren't you? You know all this.
Well, no. Every disaster, we always learn something new. And as Andy and Val found out, and we know this is true, you never know what you're going to end up doing, and you got to be flexible. I know you, Amanda, and Jeff are very flexible. So when you go there ready to do radio and they want you to mop the floors, okay. And then later on, they'll have you doing radio. So be flexible, look sharp, bring your best gear, and help out, and we'll grow the amateur radio service magically with all these new believers.
That's right. And a lot of times when you come as an amateur radio operator, be prepared to sit around and do nothing. And that's a lot of it. You're just on standby because if you're being used, that means there's something actually serious going on and you don't want that situation. So it's better that they're not asking for you. But any way you can help, if you can handle phone calls where their guys can go out and rescue somebody in swift water, absolutely take that phone from them. Say, I'll answer the phone. I'll do it. And Val and Andy are a testament to that tonight. So thank you guys. I know we really have gone way long, so we've got to wrap this up, but I really appreciate the help. And I think everyone in the United States can say thanks to Val and Andy right now and all the other operators out there that are doing the same thing.
Well, thanks.
You bet.
Okay. Well, thanks for being here tonight, everyone. Amanda, great to see you and radio and even Jeff there. Gordo, always great to see you. And Val, and lovely guest, Jeff. Or excuse me, not Jeff, that was Andy.
Andy.
I'll get you for that.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Well, you such a nice shirt there, you know. How can you miss? And thanks for all both of you have done through these hurricane relief efforts here and all that we know that you're going to do yet. Well, Bob has pulled out of here. I think he was going to a special event station tonight. I didn't get the call sign, but I believe he will be on 7.266 after the show tonight. You might catch him over there. Thanks for being here. We'll be back again next week. And for now, 73. You want that?